Hello, and welcome to the very special Open Systems Media panel discussion, ECAST, on Open Standards-Based Platforms, Ideal for Military, Aerospace, and Government Applications. Today's speakers are from Emerson, Intel, and Radisys. I'm Chris Schufo, Group Editorial Director at Open Systems Media. Of pertinence to today's ECAST are our magazines Compact PCI and Advanced TCA Systems, VME and Critical Systems, Military Embedded Systems, and Small Form Factors magazine. It's very difficult to deliver new systems with the most advanced features that also interoperate with systems already in the field. Yet the U.S. military's network-centric warfare vision not only requires such systems, but wants them to be cheaper and deployed more quickly than ever before. These constraints cause sleepless nights among embedded system developers. In today's ECAST live panel discussion, you'll find out how to navigate these strict military requirements by participating in real time with technology experts from Intel, Emerson, and Radisys. Attendees will get a better grasp on the benefits of using open standards-based commercial off-the-shelf products for applications in military, aerospace, and government, aka MAG. Our sponsors pose this question: can you really meet strict requirements and deliver better products faster and at a lower cost? Of course, the answer is yes. Most importantly today, you'll get about 30 minutes or more to ask questions directly to our speakers via the browser console on your screen. No reasonable question will be refused, time permitting. Emerson and Radisys are premier members of the Intel Embedded Alliance. Today's panel discussion is sponsored by Intel Embedded Alliance. Next, some housekeeping items. Today's total briefing will consume a short 30 minutes, leaving us 30 minutes or more for the live panel discussion. On the audience console window before you, I encourage you to note a couple of buttons, the Enlarge Slides button and the Forward to a Friend button. With the latter, you can send an email to someone inviting them to participate live in this very ECAST. As well, you'll also need to have all pop-up blockers disabled or at least allow pop-ups from ON24. You'll also find on your console window a button that allows you to enter questions in real time. This is the heart of today's discussion. This will be the most interesting part of today's ECAST. We'll do our best to address all questions. If you have a question intended for a specific speaker or company, please so note at the very beginning of your question. Else, I'll parcel the questions equally to our speakers. And if you have a question pertaining to the ECAST operation itself, one of our technicians will respond back to you privately during the ECAST. Note that as much as we'd like to, we may not get to all of your questions today. In that case, someone may get back to you after the ECAST with more information. Our sponsors have also asked us to insert a short closing survey at the end of today's presentations. And oh yes, before I forget, someone always asks, this ECAST will be posted online within 48 hours. More details at the end. Let's get started. I'd like to introduce our very first speaker, Peter Carlston from Intel. Peter is a platform architect with Intel's Embedded Computing Division, has held a wide variety of software and systems engineering positions at Intel, including telecommunications infrastructure platform architect, and currently, he is platform architect for military, aerospace, and government. Specific areas of interest include performance and SWAP, size, weight, and power, information assurance, and digital signal and image processing on Intel general-purpose processors and FPGAs tightly coupled to those processors. By the way, the latter is called QuickAssist. Peter, you have the floor.
Thanks very much, Chris. All right. The military, as Chris mentioned, has a goal, one vision and one network. They're talking increasingly about leveraging the economies of scale of cost commercial products, but putting them into systems for the military that are open architected and connected. This jives very well, in fact, with Intel's goals. As you may know, we used to be a very large mil-spec supplier into the Defense Department. We got out of that business for business reasons, I guess you could say. But with the increased emphasis on use of COTS systems in the military, we now have a major focus in the military, and I'm part of that group here in the Embedded and Communications group in Arizona. We believe that we're offering some good value propositions here to help meet industry challenges. For example, all silicon on the Embedded group's roadmap is guaranteed for 7 to 10 years of availability. We now have a wide variety of low-power multi-core processors that do 32, 64-bit processing. We're involved in many industry groups, including a number very important to military customers. We're also quite excited about the hardware virtualization and secure boot enhancements that are now built into many Intel products. These are being used today for building protected multi-level access systems for customers such as the NSA's High Assurance Platform Program. And then finally, as you'll hear from the other speakers today, Intel really is about standards-based products, and we try to enable our customers and to produce these commercial platforms based on standards-based products. This slide is getting at one of the amazing things about Moore's Law. It's still alive and well. In fact, our CEO, Paul Otellini, has mentioned that we don't see any reason why we can't continue to double the number of transistors and shrink the size, weight, and power of our products for at least the next 10 or 15 years. This slide is showing this product rollout we're on. We call it a tick-tock model. Today, we've released products based on this Mahalem microarchitecture with integrated memory controllers, the 45-nanometer transistor process is the first to use high-K dielectrics and middle-gate transistors to greatly reduce leakage power. Next year, we'll begin rolling out 32-nanometer processors with the second generation high-K dielectric technology. The year after that, Sandy Bridge will bring a new microarchitecture with especially a lot of improvements in our SIMD processing. So this is basically our vector registers go from 128 to 256 bits in width. So we think this will greatly benefit a number of the signal processing algorithms that are run on general purpose processors today. And then the next year after that, we'll shrink the Sandy Bridge microarchitecture into 22 nanometers. And in fact, we have 22 nanometer SRAMs working now. And then the year after that, we'll come out with yet another enhanced microarchitecture called Haswell. Okay. Let's see. Can I have the next slide, please?
Peter, you're all set. The next slide is Intel Silicon for Embedded Applications.
Okay. My screen has frozen. Sorry. So we have a wide variety of processors that are being used today in military designs, all the way from our Atom processors at around 2 watts of processor maximum thermal design power, quad-core or dual-core processors that run between 10 and 35 watts, quad-core processors that run between 38 and 60 watts. So this enables our customers to build a wide variety of systems all the way from ultra-mobile systems through high-performance embedded computing systems used for radar and other signal processing, for example. We continue to bring to market new graphics and floating point instructions. AVX is our code name for advanced vector instructions, the microarchitecture enhancements in Sandy Bridge. You can find information about that right now on software.intel.com. And we also show here the enhanced media and processing and floating point and graphics instructions that are coming out. Okay. All right. Those are my opening remarks. I'll turn it back to you, Chris.
Okay. Thank you very much, Peter. Let's move on to the next slide, please. Next up is James Doyle from Emerson Network Power. And before I forget, James may be joined during the panel discussion by Rob Persons, Senior Field Applications Engineer. James is the Congressional Affairs Liaison and Director of Strategic Business for Military, Aviation, and Government for Emerson Embedded Computing. Emerson is a Fortune 500 company and the largest worldwide solutions provider of complex embedded computer systems. His role includes daily interaction with the U.S. Congress and Senate, leaders in the Department of Defense, Homeland Security, and intelligence agencies, you know, those three-letter agencies. He is responsible for the primary business development lead for these market segments. James, you now have our attention.
Chris, thank you, and a special thanks to Intel for organizing this event today. I'd like to welcome you all and to thank our partners. So as a Congressional Affairs Liaison in Washington, D.C., I have a unique perspective on what's going on in the Department of Defense and what happens or is happening with the current budget and future budgets for the Department of Defense. So I won't go into the details of many programs, but I will say very cursory that we believe that there is a large growing opportunity for the embedded computing industry moving forward, specifically in two different areas of the marketplace. The first side is C4ISR, and if you're unfamiliar with this term, it stands for Command, Control, Communication, and Computers, as well as Intelligence, Surveillance, and Reconnaissance. The other side is infrastructure, or large heavy metal systems, things like ATCA and typical networking that you would see in the telecom space. The reasons for this are, as the DoD budget changes, as we see diminishing changes in the DoD budget in the future, we see a need for electronic systems that can be used from platform to platform. So where you can reuse existing technology and a commercial off-the-shelf technology in multiple different platforms, whether it be on shore, on a boat, on a ship, or even in the battlefield for situational awareness. When we look at the standard telecom system, and we look at where they are deployed, we find that the commercial systems have applications throughout the battle space. The reasons for this are literally to push information down to the node or to the warfighter. This is situational awareness. We're able to take everything that is a node, which could be a UAV, it could be the warfighter himself. All of these pieces on the battlefield allow information to be transmitted instantaneously across the network. Some of the different applications that we're seeing this, and I apologize, the slide here is a little small for me. I'm going to bring this a little bit bigger here for myself. Under command, control, and communications, we're seeing this into three different areas, the ISR, command and control, and net center communication. Under ISR, you'll see high altitude unmanned vehicle, medium altitude long range endurance flights, video capture, DoD programs, border control for not just international deployment, but U.S. deployment, homeland security, public venue security, and biometric scanning. All of these are ISR-related missions. Under command and control, you'll see fire launch, guidance, weapons, non-line-of-sight targeting, typical to the future combat systems platforms. DoD programs continue to increase under command and control, and all of this is made possible through net-centric communications. So the battlefield, the tactical communications, the net-centric systems all tie these together to, again, bring information down directly to the warfighter. I was sharing a story recently at a conference where during the first Gulf War, we knew where the Scud missiles were, but it took 70 hours for this information to go from the warfighter to the Pentagon to make the decision to come back to the warfighter. It was very difficult to be able to act on this intelligence. Recently in Afghanistan, there was a situation where the first person on a scene literally wrote a blog in his Humvee. Within 7 minutes, that information was directly in front of the president. We're able to make a decision and act upon that intelligence. This is all due to the net-centric warfare fighting systems that we have in place today. Other applications, and again, as I travel around, people say, boy, what are some of the other things that you're seeing or other needs? UAVs are just one example. Unmanned air vehicles, ground vehicles, and underwater vehicles. These all utilize commercial off-the-shelf platforms, rugged and benign. So here are a few of the key features. When we look at this, and not being a technologist per se, but really for the C4ISR and for the unmanned vehicles, size, weight, and power are critical factors to this type of platform. The heavier your payload is, the less fuel they can put on a platform, the less mission time they have as they're flying. VME, OpenVPX, Compact PCI, all open standard platforms are utilized in this type of technology. Different ISR cameras have different resolutions. I was at an event recently where they talked about some of the larger platforms, Global Hawk and Predator, that utilize large ISR systems. But there are also small handy systems, literally like a Sony Handycam, that utilize smaller form factors that are all standardized, that are all commercial off the shelf for different types of platforms. I spoke to a first sergeant recently that happens to be a gun turreter. And I said, what do? As you drive down the road? He said, well, we take a small handheld UAV and fly it down the street to look for threats. I asked him, I said, what do when you come across a threat? He said, well, typically we duck and try to get out of the way. But in reality, these are the technologies that are saving lives in the battlefield today. Moving to the next slide, talking about net-centric communications. We've talked about this a little bit a few moments ago, but commercial off-the-shelf and modified off-the-shelf are typically bus architectures that are utilized for this type of platform. VME and a conduction cooled or a rugged space for some of the more difficult environments that they operate in. It's a culture of network proprietary systems today that's moving to open systems tomorrow. Admiral Harry Harris talked about one of the larger programs that we see for infrastructure, which is the CANES program for the Navy, where he's quoted to say, we will no longer be a stovepipe network. We will be like Cortez and burn our ships and start over. The need to have open standards continues to rise throughout the military. I'm not sure this video will run here, but I will just say that we've done extensive testing on standard platforms. Commercial off-the-shelf ATCA has gone through some of the rigorous barge testing, and we may have some questions about this a little bit later on. Feel free to contact us. We'll talk to you about what is a barge test and what that means for ATCA. And after that, Chris, I'll turn it back to you. And again, thanks, everyone, for having us on the call.
All right. Thank you very much, James. And finally, our third presenter is John Long from RateAssist. He'll be joined today by Lorraine Orsino, Product Line Manager. She may assist him in some of the Q&A during the live panel session. John is Product Line Manager at RateAssist with a focus on ATCA, single board computers, and storage. He has over 10 years' experience in the communication industry, holding various marketing, sales, and operational positions with Intel, Dialogic, and AT&T. John has an MBA from Carnegie Mellon University. John, you're up.
Thanks, Chris. You know, if you look at the traditional world of the military before network-centric operations, the standard form factors were limited to basically the mission compute. Whether that was Viatronics or avionics, that's the focus of it. But as network-centric operations became more and more important and a bigger focus, the use of standard form factors and where they could be used expanded dramatically. And what we've kind of done is map what some of these applications are and the different form factors that apply. If you look at the mobile aspect, that could be the wearable mobile computing, could be computer display units, small UAVs, our ground vehicles, and small mission and control applications. For these, we see both PC 104, and we also see strong growth in the Comm Express area. If you look at the traditional mission compute in the vehicles, is you would have the traditional VME, compact PCI, and new the VPX standard. And at the very low end of that, sometimes you'll see some compact or some Comm Express applications. One of the ones that Jim talked about was more the high computing, the more infrastructure. And we see a lot of growth interest in there. You know, those would be the ground stations, some of the C4ISR applications that require data and imaging processing, and some of the mobile command centers. And we see some uses for micro-TCA and a strong deployments of ATCA in these environments. You know, a lot of folks will go, why is ATCA valuable to the military market? You know, one of the ones compared to the other standard form factors out there, it offers the highest performance for a lot of these applications today. You have customers in the telco industry who have been deploying this for a long time. Most of them are deploying 10 gigabit networks, and now they're starting to move to 40 gig. The board is a bigger board, can cool more, and you can put the latest processors on it, whether that's packet processing or x86 architecture. And if you start looking at the products that are available in the market today that can be deployed in a military application, it's about 2 to 8 times the performance of VPX and up to 40 times performance some of the old form factors as compact PCI. One of the other strengths of ATCA is the longevity. Now, this standard has been around for about 7 years now. There's a very broad ecosystem supporting it and has been deployed widely by most of the major TEMs and in a lot of the networks right now running traffic on the network. It's also a truly open form factor. The last data point I saw, there was roughly 45 companies making ATCA products, and they can be specialized from storage products all the way to platform-level providers such as Radisys. And that means that innovation is not limited to some of the other form factors out there that could be a commercial blade center, that there are multiple players playing in this industry and driving innovation. And finally, you know, ATCA has been ruggedized for military. You know, there are customers that specialize in ruggedized chassis such as LCR. Most vendors can do conformal coating, RTV, and the other ones needed to harden it depending on the application. And it has been deployed in naval, airborne, and ground deployments. We also see a lot of interest in Comm Express, and we think Comm Express for some of the mobile applications is very interesting. It can deliver a high performance in a very small form factor and can support the latest Intel mobile processors and chipsets. Also supports a current standard since it's PCI Express and the SATA. It's an industry standard, again, that is truly open, that if you design it correctly, it is open and can work across different vendors. You know, the small form factor makes it really ideal for low power and battery operated applications. And when you take that Comm Express module and put it on a carrier card, you can address a lot of things. You know, that carrier card could be the back of a computer display. It could be made into a wearable system or even deployed in UAGs or UAVs. You know, the Comm Express approach to embedded design delivers the benefits of modularity, scalability, and it also is an easy path for customers to upgrade the Comm Express module while keeping the carrier card the same. And finally, the latest on why Radisys delivers to the Mil-Aero. You know, we are one of the leading suppliers of ATCA and Comm Express products. Much like, you know, the communications is we have long life. Using the Intel silicon, we can support products from 7 to 10 years. We have assured supply programs. We've done the ruggedization, while it's conformal coating to extended temperature by design for the Comm Express modules. You know, all of our products are designed to be NEBS and have achieved NEB certification, and a lot of those are very similar to the military specs. Commies have been designed for extended temperatures, not simply screening, but taking the design to allow them to operate in harsh environments. And finally, ISO 9000 and TL 9000 certified. Chris, I'll hand it back over to you.
All right. Well, thank you very much, John. We have it's taken us right about 30 minutes so far, so we're perfectly right on track, exactly as we had predicted. So as these gentlemen have been speaking, questions have been coming in, and we've got already a decent-sized queue of questions. For those of you who do have questions to pose or who have not yet posed questions, I encourage you to use that console button that I mentioned. Let's get right to the Q&A. The first question for the panel discussion, I'm going to address this specifically to Intel, and then I'm going to ask the other companies if they'd like to amplify anything that Intel has to say on this, because this is the core, no pun intended, of what we're talking about today. So the first question directly to Peter. Why is Intel's embedded group focusing on the military again? Didn't you get out of the mil-spec business?
Well, yes, we did get out of the mil-spec business. But as I mentioned briefly earlier, with the renewed emphasis on commercial off-the-shelf silicon and systems built with that silicon by our partners such as Emerson and Radisys, we decided the time was right to focus again on the military. And as I also tried to point out, we now have very power-efficient processors that can go into a large number of form factors, including relatively small and very small form factors. So we're getting a lot of traction with many of the prime contractors and their suppliers all over the United States and, for that matter, all over the world. So we believe we have the right products, we have the right support mechanism, and we're able to enable our partners to be successful in the military now.
Okay. So since you just closed your answer, Peter, with the word partners, I'm going to ask the other two gentlemen participating today to comment on that. So, James, would you care to comment on this question as it pertains to Intel and Emerson?
Absolutely, Chris. Thank you. We are seeing a growing change in the prime contractors and the DoD with interest in the Intel silicon. As things move forward, we see greater adoption for, as Peter mentioned, commercially available silicon that operate in all different temperatures and different platforms. So we think it's a great time for Intel to come back to the marketplace and to truly be a leader. We're looking forward to their continuing support and leadership as we move forward.
Okay. Thank you, James. John, would you care to comment on this, Intel's re-entry into the MAG market?
Yeah, I mean, we're excited about it, and much as Jim has said, we have seen the adoption of x86 architecture and the Intel processors in the space. And I think that's due, as Peter has mentioned, is they have the lower power, higher performing processors now, and they also have the higher performing, and it allows a lot of the applications to move to more standard form factors and also starting to see some movement to more standard operating systems.
Okay, thank you very much. There's a follow-on question here I'd like to pose back to Peter, but I'm going to ask the question, and then I'm going to preface it with my own answer and ask Peter to comment on it, and then we're just going to keep this rolling here. So this question comes from the audience. It says, I guess general to everybody, but I'm going to direct it to Peter. 7 to 10 years historically has not been enough support time. My opinion on that, having covered this market, having been in the market and then covering it as a journalist for the last 7 years, is that this is what we get with COTS, and that a component supplier offering a 7-year life cycle is as good as you're going to get from any component supplier, with only a handful of exceptions. 7 years is a long, long time from a component supplier's commitment. Peter, your comment on that. The question is, 7 to 10 years historically has not been enough support time. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree. There are many military programs that equipment is being sold into for much longer than 7 to 10 years. And that's where a commercial company such as Intel has to rely on our partners to manage the supply chain there. So we give along early advance notice about last time buys, and our partners are able to manage the supply chain for much longer than 7 to 10 years. But you're right, Intel guarantees 7 to 10 years availability.
Okay, very good. Next question goes to Emerson then. What's the future, or what is the future of warfare, and how do you see the embedded computing industry supporting it? Question for you, James.
Oh, boy, Chris, that's a really large, broad question. Let me try to wrap this around situational awareness, what we talked about a little bit earlier. Our view of it, our opinion, is that the collaboration of technology and the warfighter will continually enhance our capability to be able to operate in multiple theaters. Not just the U.S. forces, but forces around the world with coalition forces. Being able to use commercial off-the-shelf technology allows us to collaborate with our partners like Great Britain to be able to share information and be able to do different missions collaboratively is a very important thing for the security of the U.S. So we see technology as the forefront of allowing us to have, I hate to use the word safer, but a more aware battlefield that will keep our troops safer as we move forward into the future. Rob, do you have anything you'd like to add on this?
No, I agree with you in general there, Jim. I think that the having the variety of form factors, not just the traditional VME OpenVPX model, fits a variety of applications, and I think that because we've got all these different open standards that are all using similar based silicon, I think you can address a variety of different things, but have a lot more overlap with software.
Okay, thank you. There is a follow-up question here on the list that plays off of something Rob just said. Does Emerson support any other open standards than the ones that Jim has talked about today? Maybe you'd like to give us a quick list of those?
Are we talking architectures, like hardware architectures?
I'm talking about open LRU
okay.
form factors, board form factors.
I mean, our entire product portfolio, it really centers around open standards. So it's advanced TCA, VME, compact PCI, even to some of the newer standards as well based on AMC form factors, micro TCA. So, I mean, we tend to focus on all those different product families.
Okay. Thank you very much. Next question to Radisys. Where can ComExpress and advanced TCA be used in the mil/aero market?
Yeah, I mean, there are two areas. The ComExpress is really good for the mobile applications. You know, we've seen adoption in computer display units where you can easily pull them out of a vehicle for changing them out. We've seen it in the mobile man-wearable and also in some of the smaller UAVs. You know, ATCA, on the other hand, is a much larger form factor. You know, ATCA is probably not a viable form factor for a tank or, a fighter plane.
Mm-hmm.
But, large aircraft and ground stations are ideal applications for ATCA.
Okay, thank you. That also will cross off another question that was on the list. Is ATCA is a larger form factor than, say, a 6U module? Is this a factor in embedded applications? Why or why not? I think you've just answered that, unless you'd like to amplify your answer a bit.
No, I think when we look at all the different form factors out there, whether it's VPX, VME, they all fit in different segments, and they're all viable products for the long run. Some are better fits for different applications than others.
Okay, very good. Getting back to Intel, question here, what is Intel doing to address the need for, I'm having a little trouble reading this, what is Intel doing to address the need for much higher performance within the smallest size, weight, and power envelopes possible? Question for you, Peter. Swap.
Well, yes, that's that's an interesting question. Luckily now, Intel as a corporation is very focused on size, weight, and power. It's no secret that in the past, there was a need for more and more and more performance, and in the desktop space, you could just add bigger fans and more ducting and that sort of thing, and no one protested too much. But those days are over. With the move to multi-core processors, we've really enhanced our technologies such as fine-grained power management. We shut off parts of the core and parts of the what we call the uncore when they're not being used, and then just microseconds ahead of when they need to be used, they're switched back on. So, or nanoseconds really. So there's a lot of technology that's going into making our processors more power efficient. And then I've also mentioned previously something about microarchitecture enhancements. And the Halo microarchitecture basically quadrupled our memory bandwidth, put memory access times down to 4 and 5 nanoseconds, made a big difference in the performance of a number of algorithms. I've done personally just benchmarking on some very high-end radar algorithms, and we got between a single-threaded or an unthreaded application and a multi-threaded application, we increased the performance 38 times. By running it on new Intel microprocessors in the Halo family. So there's a lot going on there.
All right. Well, certainly from my standpoint, covering the market as both a journalist and as an analyst, I see the groundswell towards the Intel architecture products. If you look over time, we started with BitSlice for digital signal processing, CISC processors with the x86 family, and over time we've migrated and marched forward. The processor of choice for most deployed military applications over the last 5 to 10 years has been the PowerPC family for embedded applications, specifically with Altavec, and now with the extensions that you're talking about and the new multi-core architectures that Intel's coming out with, I definitely see a groundswell there, and we have many more questions on the list that pertain to these sorts of things with the Intel architecture. But I'm going to keep going with our other speakers, and we're going to get back to that. So question for Emerson. What are your chief concerns being raised that inhibit the adoption of COTS technology and applications as part of the overall defense strategy? I think that could be similar to the question that someone posed earlier about the 7 to 10 year life cycle, almost questioning is COTS valid in defense or not. So what are the chief concerns being raised with regard to COTS?
Well, James? Chris, that's you're absolutely right. One of the concerns is certainly life cycle, understanding the supply chain management and how we continue to support these programs for 15 to 25 years, depending on the program. The JSF, or Joint Strike Fighter, is actually a 90-year program, and there's no one that we're aware of that can truly support 90 years of the same technology. So that's one area of concern. Some of the other areas for commercial off-the-shelf really come down to Congress and understanding the acquisition cycles and the way that you need to get to the left of an RFP and help the industry and the military and the customers and the users in the field understand what is available. I ask my people when I travel to write their congressman and congresswoman and change one phrase. If they were to write a letter and say, please make sure in the next House resolution it says shall be open standard versus should be open standard, I think that would change a lot of the industry that we're in today.
Makes sense. Thank you very much. So question for Radisys. And we're going to switch from hardware for a moment. Let's talk a little bit about software. How important are the middleware standards for HA, I assume that means high availability, such as SAF, Service Availability Forum, and associated products to the success of ATCA and MilAero? A lot of acronyms here.
Yeah, no, middleware is critical, and, the open standards are very important. Open standards provide some vendor independence and allows taking the same base product and moving it to multiple applications. So the middleware is important, and the open standards are important. The open standards build on each other to get you cost-effective commercial off-the-shelf products.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. All right, there's a follow-on question for this that I'm going to ask, I think probably Emerson and Radisys as the two hardware companies. Of course, semiconductors could be considered hardware, but the two board companies. To follow on with this, we're talking about high availability. Recently, Vita's Open VPX initiative relies very, very heavily on the PCMIG-based HA architecture for management control data planes, as well as power planes, et cetera. Would either of you gentlemen care to comment on Open VPX and how it follows on with this high availability middleware concept in what was a traditional embedded form factor, VME, and now OpenVPX? Either of you two gentlemen, John or James, feel like you want to take that one on?
This is Rob Persons. I'll take an initial stab and let John follow on.
Go ahead.
OpenVPX is definitely going to be able to benefit from the work that's already been done in the advanced TCA world. The systems will be treated differently. We will unlikely see hot swapping capabilities on, you know, line items, but having an internal view of the system and being able to provision a variety of different boards within a chassis will be very strong, and you'll be able to do that really with the at least a subset of the SAF-based software architectures that are out there for management. So I think we'll definitely see a lot of that bleeding into the OpenVPX systems management part of the standard.
Okay. Yeah, and I would agree is, you know, the use of the same management is good. You know, it allows reuse of technology. And, you know, one of the things I think or I hope we'll see in the long run is they'll allow folks who are developing systems to easily scale from a VPX to an ATCA platform and by reusing a lot of this stuff they've already developed.
Do you think that's a likely scenario, that somebody might expand from a 3U or a 6U sized embedded VPX or OpenVPX LRU to a rack-mounted ATCA-style implementation? Obviously, they use similar components, but they're very different standards. Is that scalability a likely occurrence?
You know, I look at if a large company that's, you know, addressing different applications. It may be a different application, but a lot of the base middleware and the base technology from the software perspective can be reused across these different platforms. And I think that's where the value of some of the SAF standards are.
I agree with that. I think, too, I mean, it's very much like you see with Linux being deployed in a lot more areas. It's having that common software thread that can be reused in, whether it be in a very hardened environment or maybe not so hardened in, you know, where you have, say, a shipboard application that's that doesn't require conduction cooling and things like that. Same sort of sets of software being able to be used in a variety of different platform styles.
I do agree with that. Now that you both have said that, I do recognize the interviews I've done with Boeing and British Aerospace on the record. Both of those two companies have talked about programs where they have actively selected architectures where they have migrated from the deeply embedded, deployed, unmanned aerial systems to Humvee-mounted rack mount. And so they would definitely take their software across the ecosystem. So I agree with your assertion. Makes sense.
And the basis of having a group of engineers that have a common knowledge base around you know, a certain set of software can more easily adapt to a variety of different applications too. So it's an economy for companies that need to deploy these things and build these things. They can actually you know, have a common set of hardware engineers or software engineers actually working on them.
Okay. A number of questions here along this same next topic that I'm going to pose. I'm going to pose this to Intel first, but Peter may punt it back to the hardware guys. But it's a general question addressed to all of our speakers today. Are these products DO-178B certifiable? And if not, if not, they cannot fly in many instances is the comment that the questioner makes. So anybody care to comment first, Peter, on DO-178B certifiable?
That's all right. I'm hesitating a little bit on this. There's a lot of work going on with Intel and a number of third parties around these issues, and I'm really not prepared to say very much publicly about this at the moment.
Okay. Just by that statement, it probably gives some of our audience a very positive feeling that at least you're familiar with FAA, RTCA, DO-178XX, so that's good. How about the board-level companies, board and system-level companies here? Either of you two gentlemen care to comment?
I'll guess Emerson will start. I think that that we will likely see it in non mission critical types of systems. I mean, the place we've seen advanced TCA deployed in an airframe has been more on a sensor side rather than in a flight control side. I suppose the DO-178B compliancy might show up on a non-flight system as well, but if it's not a flight critical system, it's probably less likely to be seen. Again, if it's abstracted onto software, then we definitely have good strong partnerships with companies that do supply that kind of software product if it looks like it's necessary for an airframe.
Okay, and our last speaker, care to comment on DO-178B?
No, as I think Intel and Emerson addressed it.
Okay, very good. There's a comment here I'd like to read that went that addresses a couple of questions back. I just want to get this one off the table so we can move on. This comes from somebody, and I'm quoting here, good luck on changing the most precise contractual word shall. This is a hard requirement. The general public will not have much luck getting this word replaced. I got a chuckle out of that. I probably have to agree with that. So getting back to Intel, pretty much the foundation of what we're talking about today, question for you, Peter. How does virtualization affect the MAG market? Please be specific.
Well, there's a lot of interest in virtualization, starting with information assurance platforms. So these are platforms where you have to protect vital information from software-based attacks, you know, viruses, rootkits, all of that sort of thing, and also run multiple levels of security at the same time on the same platform. So Intel virtualization technology that we implement in our hardware allows our partners to build very high performance multiple levels of security systems. And then, you know, we have other technology that aids the secure booting of those systems. So we see it first, at least what people are talking to me about most is in these multiple levels of security systems. But I think in other types of applications, for example, someone mentioned already shipboard computing and the racks of power efficient servers they have there, I think there's probably a more data center kind of model for virtualization as well.
Okay. You mentioned, Peter, the comment about multiple levels of security. I assume you mean MILS and probably trusted platform computing and the whole realm of security. This next question is going to go to Emerson, and it deals with security. It's a bit of a general question, but I'm going to give James a chance to dovetail security into this. And it says, can technology used in COTS systems for defense applications be leveraged and reused across multiple systems and form factors without sacrificing security? So the question, technology in COTS systems, can it be reused across multiple systems and form factors without sacrificing security? James?
So I think that's a fascinating question. Security is really an abstract, in our opinion, security is an abstract view. It's the organization, it's technology, it's management, it's the true value chain from beginning to end to understand all of the things in between, including people. To directly answer your question, technology, our technology and open standards certainly can be deployed in multiple areas. But it really comes down to the people and the process and the way it's utilized. There was a quote recently from one of the presidents of a major prime contractor that said, I'm convinced that we have six non-national spies within the organization today. So depending on how you look at your organization and how you deploy systems and how you manage it from the top, security is a critical aspect of our security as a nation. And so this is to answer your question, the answer is yes. I do believe that COTS can be utilized in multiple areas and multiple different deployments, but it also comes down to the organization and how it's utilized. Rob, do you have any more real technical portions you'd like to add to this?
No, other than the fact that we're seeing a lot of the software that runs on these systems actually taking advantage of closing a lot of the security gaps, and I think that it's a concerted effort between how you deploy the systems and who you allow to access it, along with some of the underlying software technologies that'll be a very strong solution for it all.
Okay, thank you, gentlemen. Next question for RateAssist. I think this is a bit of a follow-on to a previous question. Is ATCA viable for airborne operations?
Yes, it is. You know, especially in the larger aircraft, there are customers deploying ATCA and airborne applications on the surveillance type applications. So it is very viable. You know, I think the challenge in the airborne is hardening the board enough to handle the high-frequency vibrations, and any unique cooling requirements it may have.
Okay, very good. Back to you, Peter. I'm going to let you start off with this one. There's a whole series of questions here that are very similar to multiprocessor, multi-core. Is multiprocessor debugging technology progressing in conjunction with multi-core use in embedded systems?
Well, that's a very interesting question and gets to the heart of some very important aspects of this whole transition that's going on between single core and multi-core processors and more power efficiency. Obviously, you can't just keep your application the same and rely on processors running ever faster and faster and faster to increase your performance. So there's a lot of work going on to enable customers, especially in the military, well, all over, but it's, the problem is especially acute in the military segment, for there's not very much understanding of multi-threading. There's not a lot of experience with it. And yet the performance requirements are just not going to be met without a lot of multi-threading going on. So, frankly, I would say that tools are a little bit behind the need, but Intel, for example, is putting a lot of effort into our multi-threading tools. We have thread-checking tools. We have debugging tools. We have a lot of things going on that run on Linux, for example. We're working with real-time operating system vendors to improve their tools for multi-threading as well. So there's a lot of work going on in this area, but frankly, I'd say it's not as much as I would like to see, and it's not happening quite as fast as I would like to see. But those are just my opinions.
Okay, all right. I think I was at one of the Intel conferences where an Intel speaker stood up and said that's the number one issue facing all designers moving forward with multi-core systems is figuring out the same tools to optimize those cores and divide programs up so that they efficiently utilize today's dual and quad core devices and then migrating into the future.
Hey, Chris, this is Rob Persons. Can I add something?
Sure. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think in the case of utilization, I think that's where virtualization is going to become very important. We see it with, especially in the telecom space, where some of these advanced TCU blades could have up to 8 to heading towards 12 cores. Being able to effectively use all those cores is going to be very, very difficult without virtualization. And I think that may be one of the stronger tools that are going to be coming out and becoming more used even in the military space to really take a strong advantage of all the power that we're producing on a board.
Okay, thank you very much, Rob. Now we've still got a whole large queue of questions here, and I'm looking at the clock, and we've got about 4 minutes to go. Now, our speakers have agreed that we can go past the hour, 10 or so minutes past the hour, to keep addressing these questions. But I want to tell the audience that there are a number of questions still here. Many of these are very, very good questions, and I would encourage you folks to stick around if you'd like to hear the continuation of the Q&A. We do have a hard stop at 15 minutes past the hour, so we will not go past the hour beyond 15 minutes. But I'm going to go ahead and keep going, and we're just going to see if we can keep sliding through these questions. So here's a question I'm going to pose to RateAssist. Quote, we have had much interest in a two-slot AMC system from the military for mobile applications. how could ComExpress compete with the number of already tested AMCs already out there?
And I will hand that over to Lorraine to answer that one.
Ah, Lorraine.
So how would ComExpress compete with the number of already tested AMCs out there? I think the selection between AMCs and ComExpress are pretty much driven by the application requirements. But we have seen a number of deployments with ComExpress-based comms on these applications, military applications, I should say. And we've seen them in a number of different bladed type designs, like from VME, Compact PCI, ATCA, and proprietary blade solutions.
Okay. Very good. Thank you. Would you care to take another one, Lorraine, since you're on a roll? There's a similar question here. How does VPX compare to ATCA?
Compared to ATCA, I would have to flip that over to John, who manages our ATCA product line.
Okay. John, you feel up to how does VPX, or potentially OpenVPX, compare to ATCA? And then I'm going to give the folks from Emerson a chance to pick on that one, too.
No, I mean, we're excited that VPX, you know, has finally been adopted as a standard. You know, we think it fits a good niche in the mission computing. If you look at the differences between where VPX is and where ATCA is, ATCA can provide more power, higher processing power. ATCA also has been around for a long time. You know, it's been around about 7 years, and a lot of the bugs have been worked out for it. But there are applications where VPX is a better fit than ATCA in the mission compute.
Okay, very good. Emerson, would you care to comment on that?
Yeah, I think I agree. You know, ATCA has been around for quite a while. You know, it's a proven open standard. I think the big difference is, from our view, is really the deployment. You know, the application and deployment. And I think we've talked about this a little bit earlier. You know, ATCA is great for you know, a benign system. It's a large platform that's communication based, infrastructure platforms and communication. It fits very well. OpenVPX or VPX, now that it's going to be a true open standard and it will be utilized within the industry where it will be plug and play with everyone else, for much more rugged environments. You know, 3U, 6U, C4 ISR applications, command and control on a Humvee, out in very harsh environments where it needs to deploy and work everywhere every time is probably a more appropriate application for OpenVPX.
Okay. So I have a follow-on question then for you, James. Does your company plan on supporting OpenVPX?
Okay. Well, that's a great question, and I probably going to follow Pete's lead on this. There are some things that I can't discuss on the call due to timing of the marketplace. I can say that we are actively part of the VITA committee today. Emerson has now joined VITA, and we are continuing to watch and observe and take part in all the open standard bodies committees. And as we announce new products, you guys will be the first to hear about it.
That was a good save, because I think your company was an inventor of VME back in the day, so we would expect to see something from you. We have a whole slew of questions here that are really geared towards Intel, and since they're our anchor sponsor today, with due respect to Emerson and Radisys, I'm going to start beating up on Peter, because these are really good questions, and I really want to get the opportunity to pose them. So, with your permission, how does Intel see the future of different OS in mil defense embedded applications? Which will dominate, Windows, Linux, VxWorks, or others? Question, Peter?
Well, just speculation. So we're seeing increasing adoption of Linux, and even in some surprising applications that previously have used a real-time operating system. On the other hand, there are certain applications that are going to need a true real-time operating system forever, I mean indefinitely. So I think it's going to be a mix. We don't see in many of these applications, we don't see a lot of use of Windows in general, although, of course, for the embedded ruggedized PCs, and of course that's the platform. there's a lot of work going on right now with very small devices and mobile and Linux versions for those. There's a lot of work going on with the real-time operating system providers and Linux as well.
For those in the audience that don't know what Moblin is, it's Intel's Linux community for netbooks. Okay, very good. Next question for Intel as well. And I'm quoting here, will shrinking geometries, because remember the slide that Peter put up with Nehalem, Westmere, Sandy Bridge, and I can't remember the other ones, will shrinking geometries cause more errors due to single event upsets as a result of cosmic rays and solar neutrons, especially in non-corrected structures like an L1 cache? Finer geometries, more radiation effects. Comments on that, Peter?
So, I mean, it's a question I get all the time, of course. It's interesting. Some of the literature says that this is going to happen, and other parts of the literature say that there are some mitigating circumstances going on. So as the geometries get smaller, I think the jury's still out on this. This is an area that Intel is paying a lot of attention to in terms of our packaging and in terms of our material science to help mitigate these kinds of events. But so I'm waffling a bit.
That's fine. Okay, well, let me toss you the next question then so we can keep moving, and then I want to get some back to Radisys and Emerson. What Intel products are currently available to support high-throughput signal processing? You alluded to that at the beginning, and I mentioned QuickAssist. So we really haven't talked about Intel and digital signal processing. Can you amplify that? Maybe talk about FPGAs as well?
Sure. There's a lot of work going on with this. For example, with our dual socket and quad socket processors on server boards, including some bladed form factors, we support FPGA plug-in modules that plug in right to the processor bus, so that you can tightly couple FPGAs with general purpose processors. They share the same memory, they have cache coherency, all of that. In fact, we've licensed our RTL to both Altera and Xilinx for these purposes.
Neither of those two companies have played that up much yet. In speaking with them, I hope they will do that more in the future. And Intel has not really made a big deal about that yet either, and I think it is a big deal.
Well, I'm making it a big deal with the customers I talk to. And in fact, another part of that is an abstraction layer we call acceleration abstraction layer that the people I talk to are very interested in, that allows you to abstract those hardware resources in a service-oriented architecture kind of layer so that you publish on the system what's available. And then the application can take advantage of the best acceleration technology that it needs to at the moment. So there's work going on there for sure.
Any other comments on digital signal processing or vector processors before I move on to the next question for Emerson and Radisys?
Well, yeah, one of the things we've done as our customers are moving from Freescale-based AltaVec SIMD architecture to Intel SSE is we now have tools available to automate the conversion of Freescale AltaVec signal processing applications.
Really?
Yep.
Let me make sure I heard you correctly. Tools available to effectively cross-compile from an AltaVec instruction set program to an Intel architecture device?
For the digital signal and image processing portions, yes.
Huh.
These automatically, for example, there's one tool that is a vSIPL compiler,
sure.
I'm sorry, vSIPL library for Intel architecture that performs very well. We have, and there is another one where we have an altivec.h header file for Intel architecture. You just link that into your program, and all the digital signal processing that has used altivec functionality in the past now uses Intel streaming SIMD extension functionality. Both of these take care of byte swapping and that sort of thing.
Well, for the people who are the attendees who are still listening, and we still have quite a few, that probably was worth the wait. I'm anxious to read more about that.
We have white papers on our Embedded Design Center at Intel, so you can Google Embedded Design Center and find these.
Okay. Boy, that's great information. But I do have to move on. I am watching the clock, and I said we would have a hard stop at 12:15, which gives us about 7 minutes to go. So there, I'm going to get in as many questions as I can before I do my wrap-up and thank you. So this question for Emerson and for Radisys, and we'll take it in alphabetical order. What level of tailoring, James, is required to comply with military environmental requirements? Are Emerson and Radisys offering cocoons around commercial gear or building/converting platforms tailored to survive the environment?
I'm going to take that one, actually. This is Rob Persons. We right now are investigating those as possibilities. What we've traditionally done is partnered with other companies to look at those kind of environments. We feel it's very doable. We've done some proof of concepts for some smaller platforms with the AMC modules with a company called Hybricon, but I think that's very doable in some of the larger systems. What do you think, Jim?
Well, I think that we have announced publicly that we're developing extended temperature in some of our portfolio. And I think that when you talk about cocooning, you're probably talking about some of the conduction cooling that's going on in the micro TCA committee. I think that that's an interesting technology and an interesting approach to take a truly commercial air card to be able to adopt it to a more rugged conduction-cooled platform. And I think that there are changing technologies that could be disruptive to the marketplace, and we're looking forward to seeing where those adoptions continue. I'm sure John has some views on that as well. John?
Yeah, you know, on the ATCA, we've not seen a lot of interest in the conduction-cooled. People will always come up because of the ecosystem with ATCA with, you know, unique solutions that might address it. But I think the COM-E platforms that Lorraine can address have a lot of those, and the customers are doing a lot of things with that. And Lorraine, do you want to talk more about that?
Yeah, so we see like extended temp operating range as well, one of these common requirements which we do support in our products. And then, of course, there are the additional environmental, usually application-specific requirements, you know, where we could potentially add conformal coding, do extended shock and vibe environmental testing. But with the nature of COM Express, that custom architecture around it, the COM itself is standards-based, but the carrier and the system design is fully customized. So at the system level, we can certainly do a lot of tailoring to address specific requirements.
Okay. There's a question here, and it's a little bit controversial, but I think it's very appropriate to pose to Emerson and Radisys. And the questioner says, I'm familiar with VME and OpenVPX products in mil defense. Do you have any data, which is the market size for ATCA/COM Express products in mil defense? Is there any data to that effect?
This is Jim. I can speak some in generalities. There are some published reports. VDC certainly has some intelligence and some documents printed. I can give you our perspective. You know, the market size as a whole, not getting down to bus structure itself, but according to reports from third parties and people like VDC, they see the overall embedded market as about a $3 billion market, and that includes systems. Out of that $3 billion is about $1 billion in specific boards. Now, that's only one portion of the market. The next size of that is when you really truly look at systems as a whole or platforms as a whole, and that expands to about $30 billion. And that would include some of the prime contractors and LSIs. So depending on how you slice up the pie, the traditional embedded market, in our view, is about $3 billion.
Okay. Radisys, any comment on that? Lorraine?
Go ahead. Yeah, I'd like to add to that, you know, referencing again like third-party reports, you know, ETP forecast the mil aerospace market, which is basically just ruggedized applications in the $925 million range for 2009.
Mm-hmm. Okay, very good. Okay, so I'm going to give the last question to Intel, and then we're going to close this up with 3 minutes to go. And I have to chuckle at this question because the person posing the question obviously doesn't know Intel very well. But I'm going to read the question anyway, but I think they saved themselves by the second part of the question. And here goes. What other devices are on your roadmap? And then they say, if you can't tell us, then explain the types of feedback you're hearing from the military marketplace. So, Peter, last question to you.
Okay. Yeah, so there's a lot of buzz around our graphics processor called Larrabee. I can't talk about details or schedules about that, but everyone else is doing that for Intel. So just caveat emptor, right, or however you pronounce that. So you can find stuff on the web about that. So what we're seeing... very difficult problems from our customers. Sensors are getting incredibly capable, huge bandwidths of data coming in, and you need to make sense of that. And it's just outstripping the performance per swap available today. So there's no question that many core processors, and we talked about 800 core processors as a research vehicle. There's no question that there's a lot of work going on in this area to work with some of these workloads that are just pretty much, just very high-end and very demanding. And it'll be more of a hybrid kind of system, I think, for a lot of the I/O. You're going to be using FPGAs to help decimate that and then putting the most important parts or the parts that need symbolic processing as well as digital processing onto the general purpose processors. There's a lot of work going on here.
Sounds like people should stay close to Intel as a market leader in this space and then key vendors and supporters of the Intel Embedded Alliance, including Emerson and Radisys. So we're out of time today, folks. We've got 1 minute to go. Thank you all for staying past the hour. I appreciate that. I'd like to thank Peter, James, and John, who, by the way, are not really part of any organized group, musical, religious, or otherwise. Thanks also to their employers, Intel, Emerson, and Radisys, and all of you who are following along remotely. As I mentioned at the beginning, we may not have had time to address all of your questions. We didn't. There are still a large queue of questions here. I wish we could keep going, but we can't. And as appropriate, somebody may get back to you offline. There were several questions that people posed which were very specific, almost have a salesperson call me sort of questions, and I'm certain that our sponsors will get back to them. This panel session ecast will be posted online at the URL shown on your screen within 48 hours. Thank you all for attending. We're adjourned today. Goodbye.